and welcome to another edition of Vigems with me, Yudali Wickham Ashby. And today, I will continue the journey of focusing on people with disabilities, their achievements, their challenges, and just the general outlook on life. And today, I'm extremely honored and pleased to have in the studio with me the most honorable Kerri-Ann Eiffel. She has many more titles, and we have heard from her over the years on this program. So it's indeed an absolute pleasure to have her back in the studio where we can get a little update and fast forward into the future. So welcome to the program, Kerri-Ann.
Thank you, Yudali. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Good. So, Kerri-Ann, the last time we spoke, you did not have the title Most Honorable, and you had not received the award that you recently received. So let us backtrack a little and just fill us in for those rare persons who may not have heard about you at all. Just tell us who you are.
I am Kerri-Ann Eiffel. I am from the beautiful island of Barbados. I'm totally blind, and I have been for the majority of my life. I am passionate about inclusive education and technology, and actually the link between the two and how they can support the advancement of persons with disabilities in general and the blind and visually impaired specifically. I work with the National Disabilities Unit teaching assistive tech to the blind and visually impaired. I also serve as president of the Barbados Council for the Disabled. I serve as president of the Caribbean Council for the Blind. I'm on the executive of the National United Society of the Blind Barbados. And I am the current vice chair of the Commonwealth Disabled Peoples Forum. So that's who I am. I am also superintendent of my Sunday school at church, the Anglican Church of the Resurrection. So that is my business life. I think since we last talked, I've gotten kind of passionate about houseplants. So that's one of my hobbies, along with crocheting, reading fiction, mainly some nonfiction as well, and just improving myself as a person living with blindness. So that's me.
Wonderful. That's quite a lot. And, you know, persons might say, she's blind and doing all these things. Well, I will tell you, I share the passion about the plants as well and reading. Crocheting, not yet.
It's not so much.
Not yet. I did it before, but it's not a hobby. So tell me, Kerri-Ann, how do you balance all this professional stuff that you have to do with Commonwealth Foundation, the Caribbean Council for the Blind, the Barbados Council for the Disabled, your IT consultant, all that work? How do you really balance it and still maintain your personal life and have time for yourself and your own development?
You know, that's an interesting question. I didn't think I needed to balance. I thought I had it balanced perfectly. But when COVID came along, I realized I didn't have it balanced perfectly because I found that I had very long days trying to keep up with all the various things I did. And that started me on a journey of self-discovery. And so I just start to try to carve out spaces for myself, and I multitask. I say I like to read, but most of the time I'm listening to audiobooks. But if I'm listening to audiobooks, it's usually playing in the background while I'm doing something else. I might be crocheting if I'm out on the patio. I might be checking in on the plants, that kind of thing, while I'm doing my books. The other things I try to do is I compartmentalize things. So I designate certain parts of my time, certain parts of my day towards this or that. It's easier with some things than others. And I don't have a perfect blend as yet, but that's where family and friends come in. They help to keep you sane. My aunt continues to complain that I don't take care of myself. So I try to do more of that. My best friend, she makes snarky remarks sometimes, says you're an overachiever. But when she does it out of love, she does it so that it checks me sometimes. You need to slow down and stop. So my Friday evenings, at least three of them, I try not to do much of anything. I forgot to mention I'm also a member of a Rotary Club, and I serve on the Constitutional Reform Commission. So yeah, I was thinking something was missing off that list. But Rotary, while that is service, that's also about fellowship as well. So spending time with my Rotarian colleagues, it takes from you, but it's a fun activity as well. So when you put all of those things into the mix, it's all about trying to figure out what you're supposed to do and when. I won't tell my houseplants don't suffer sometimes from neglect. And I won't tell you that my Afghan didn't take me a year to complete crocheting, but I get it done. So my mother got a beautiful Afghan for her Brother's Day gift, and she loves it. So it
works. Nice. Okay, so tell me one moment that really stands out in your mind as the moment when you recognized that your voice made a significant difference in the lives of persons with disabilities. And, you know, notwithstanding the fact or you didn't think about your vision impairment, what was that one moment that you would say really stands out and is blazed into your memory as a moment that you really made a difference?
You know, that's a difficult one to answer, not because I haven't had them, but because of my everyday job teaching blind and visually impaired persons. I get that every day on a one-to-one basis. When my 12-year-old student that is now at Harrison College, when he achieves something, when he does something and I can see where my work went, those are my aha moments. But if I had to pick one, I can't, because there's so many of them. I'd have to say that as I look around my country, I can see so many different things that I've been a part of and has transformed other things. Assistive technology, for example. Then I can see people taking it seriously. Honestly, there are so many different things that resonate with me on a day-to-day basis. I remember one time I was in a conference somewhere and I was sitting beside this lady. I'd met her previously, and on this occasion, she told me she was glad to see me again because she needed to tell me something. And it was that when she'd met me the first time, she had just recovered from a challenge with her eyes. And she was terrified of going blind. And it seems as though I said to her that, you know, when you accept your visual impairment, then you start to realize all of the tools that are out there that can bring life back to, you know, normal. And then you realize there's nothing to be afraid of anymore. Apparently, I told her this. And she said that that was, for her, the definitive moment. So she had subsequently gotten married and everything. She was a lady like in her 30s, 40s, somewhere around there. But that meant something to me, because it meant that a casual conversation I'd have with a total stranger had changed her perspective on her life. Those are the moments that mean most to me. And I'd have to say there's so many different ones that happen, you know?
Can you explain and share how the technology has enhanced your life, your independence, your mobility?
Oh my goodness. Where do I start?
At the beginning.
Good grief, I can't. Okay, when I was in fourth form, I received my first computer. And that was when I was first able to prepare assignments. Now, this was a desktop, had a huge attachment for the screen reader. So it wasn't something that you could take around. But I was able to write essays and review them for accuracy. That was a transformative thing. Fast track to the iPhone. Oh my heavens. The iPhone. Yes, I am very biased. But that is a tool of absolute perfection for blind and visually impaired people. I say that because there are apps for everything. You know, there's a joke, there's an app for that. Well, that's not a joke, it's true. And in the life of the blind and visually impaired, you can scan things. Something as simple as dealing with my houseplants. I follow this guy on YouTube and he swears by the moisture meter, but they don't develop them for accessible for blind and visually impaired people. But hey, it's cheap and I wanted to get one, but it would have meant I had to keep bothering somebody to read my moisture meter for me. I found it Be My Eyes app and I started using that. Now, for those that don't know, they use volunteers to use your camera and tell you what's going on. But then they introduced the AI component to that. So now I don't even need to depend on another human being. So 5 o'clock in the morning, see me sticking my moisture meter in my plants. Now, that's a very basic, simple thing. But transform that into my role in the Constitution Reform Commission, keeping up with the multitude of documents I have to read. My JAWS screen reader works beautifully with that. When I did my postgrad diploma in special education, it was during COVID, so we were all in the same place. So we all had to do online. And I got my textbooks, I did my assignments, everything online. I graduated most outstanding student that year from Erdiston Teacher Training College. So again, the technology simplified things for me and for my tutors, because they didn't have to wonder, how is Kerry going to access this material? They just had to share the electronic one with me. Is it perfect? No, it is not. Filling in my forms when I travel, I do a lot of travel. And so when I have to come back in and I need to do that BIMSAFE, well, it's not BIMSAFE anymore, but the online immigration form, I can do that. I can walk past the kiosk. I don't need to wait on somebody else to do those things for me. Zoom meetings, Teams meetings. It is fantastic how we can share and interact with everybody. It's just wonderful how much technology changes my life, and by extension, how much I want to share it with changing the lives of other people.
Fabulous. I can attest to that as well. So it does really provide a transforming moment and moments for each of us as we use the technology to enhance our lives. Now, Kerry, as a blind woman, how do you navigate fashion, you know, your self-expression as a woman, you know, how do you do that?
Well, by the way, there is an app to help you apply your makeup. So there is an app for that too. But how do you explore it? You have to go with what feels right to you. Now, I've encountered some blind people who I don't agree with. And they say that they can't see, so they don't need to bother about their appearance. My appearance means a lot to me. And so I go with how things feel. And I experiment. I try things out. I know what style works for me. It pays to have a mother that loves to shop. And because she loves to shop, she has developed my taste in fabric, in style. So I know from the things that she's purchased what I should purchase, because people pay me compliments. I know when I feel pretty. I love my locks. And anybody who knows me knows I have long locks. I love them. And I love them because locks are they're so nimble. You can do so many different things with it. I walk into a room, my locks are open and down, and people tell me, fantastic. I walk in with a pinup, they tell me they look good. So you know what? I don't have to worry, because my hair is just what it's supposed to be. It does its job. I remember one time I used to go to this hairdresser, and every time I left, this when I had curls, my taxi driver at the time used to say, man, Kerry, your hair looking good enough. Rest him in his grave. And then I changed hairdressers. And he never complimented me. So I know that that hairdresser wasn't doing a good job. So time to change hairdressers. So you go by what other people say. But the thing is, one of the challenges of living with our particular impairment is, for good or ill, the sighted people around us try to impress their taste on us sometimes. So they, mm-hmm. you know, like if you happen to have a friend, my best friend, for example, does not wear jewelry, has never bowed her knee to makeup, doesn't even own a dress. That is who she is. So she doesn't quite get my love of makeup and those kinds of things. But she does not try to impress her taste on me. But there are other people around you who think, because they can see it, that they must, you know, change you. So they tell you, oh, that outfit is a little too old for you, or too young for you, or too what for you. So sometimes you have to be a rebel and be stubborn, as they tend to tell you. I tell them I'm not stubborn. I'm just an adult, and work with it. And guess what? Everybody makes fashion faux pas from time to time. And what excludes me from doing that as well? If I wear something and too many people complain about it, then I know that's not going to work. I never owned a pair of Levi's jeans until last year. I couldn't understand what the hype was. Jeans was jeans as far as I was concerned. Again, my mother bought me a pair of Levi's. I put them on, and now I own 3 pairs of Levi jeans because I know how good they work.
Right. Now, Kerry, you've grown into a beautiful lady and you have experienced quite a lot as a blind woman and most importantly, as a Black Barbadian woman. Now, share with us your thoughts and feelings about being acknowledged as the most honorable and president of the Senate, president of several organizations, or vice president. So you're playing a meaningful role in the development not only of Barbados, but of the Commonwealth, of the Caribbean, and of course, family. So share with us some of your thoughts and how you have embraced all of these accolades and awards and just continuing to contribute.
I start from this place. I don't wake up every day thinking about what's the next award, what's the next accolade. I do what I do because it feels right to me. I understand what it is to be set aside because of something over which I have absolutely no control. I didn't determine my gender. I didn't determine my race. I didn't ask to be blind. These are just parts of the components that make me up. And therefore, I do not see why they need to limit my exposure or experience in life. If I want something, I go after it. I don't see why my blindness needs to keep me back. That's me. That's how I start. Then I believe in what I do. I believe that I have a voice to be heard. I believe that I understand blindness in a way that many others may not. Too often, people around us, you know, like I was talking to a colleague yesterday, and she was sharing that a person who had gone blind, her family and friends didn't want her to cook because she's going to burn herself at the stove. Name a cook who has never burnt themselves, sighted or otherwise. What makes me so privileged that my skin can't take a burn, right? What child doesn't fall when they play? Why shouldn't a blind child fall when they play? It's by falling that you learn to grow hard. It's by falling that you learn to be more self-aware around you. Why must I be protected from males being around me? What makes my heart so soft that I cannot participate in a relationship? My blindness does not make me soft. And so I believe that we all have the right to participate. And I believe it's also my responsibility to share with other people. If it's one thing I can do well, it's talk. So since that happens to be the gift that I've been blessed or cursed with, depends on your perspective, I speak and I try to make sure that other people listen and understand that I will not be set aside. And people living with disabilities, whatever that disability happens to be, that they should not be set aside just because we happen to be different from what is considered to be the norm. So when I was awarded the most honorable, I was the most shocked person. Shocked because honestly, I didn't expect it. It wasn't something I was thinking about. When I was president of the Senate, people were annoyed on my behalf because they said every other president was sir or whatever. And you're not. And I said, but I'm only 38 years old. So what do you expect? You know? And so by the time I left the Senate, I was closer to 45. And I still hadn't received it. But when I left the Senate for the last time, it was just another part of my life, another thing that I had worked with and worked through and hope that I'd done credit to. So when I got the call last year from the Prime Minister's assistant telling me about this, I hadn't thought about it. The Anthony N. Sabga people, they will tell you that I was probably one of the most difficult people to pin down because they kept pressing me to self-nominate. I don't see what I do as were of necessary of that level of recognition. I don't see that this is anything different from what any other teacher or any other person puts into their life. Yes, I am committed to it. And therefore, I try to do it to the best. I try to learn as much as I can to share with my students, my people, my friends, whoever. But that's not what I do. So I didn't take the time. And when I did, it was too much stress for me to complete the form. So the local nominating committee, they did it. And I'm glad to see that people recognize the work I do. I'm proud to know that people are listening and watching and paying attention. But what makes me most proud is when I see people like Janelle Odell, attorney at law, Ashton Hoyt, you know, and it doesn't have to be those big achievements. I have a student who struggled with things on the computer And when she can call me and tell me she paid her bills the other day, you know, then I know that my work is worthwhile. So when you take all of those things into consideration, I'm very proud and honored to have received these recognitions. But what it means is that I've changed a lot of people's lives, and I've opened up people to considerations and things that they would not have otherwise thought about. When I turn up to do horseback riding, when I join ballroom dance classes, as I've done in the past, these aren't things that people associated with blindness or disability. I made people think, right? And when I go after those kinds of things, I do them on my own. A lot of my visually impaired colleagues, they've been rejected so often. Sometimes they do it as a group, because when they do it as a group, then they feel more comfortable because they have other people around them. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, nothing at all. But then people think that they have to do it specially for them. I don't want people to think that. I want people to recognize inclusion. Inclusion means that you have to make adjustments and that you may have to provide access to things in a different way. But it doesn't mean that I need to sit in a separate room to participate in things. It just means that you need to think broader and wider. And that's why I do what I do.
Great. And I would say congratulations yet again, Carrie-Anne, on all these awards and accolades. I think that, as you just aptly said, you do what you do because you love it, you enjoy it, and that's part of the rewards. Now, Carrie-Anne, tell us in terms of mentors, do you have mentors who work with you?
Yes and no. When I say yes and no, it depends on what I'm doing. I've interacted with Professor Senator Floyd Morris. It gives me great pleasure to say that. Then there's my teacher, Mona Corbin. Then there are others within the disabled community. But I take inspiration from everything and anything. To be honest, I believe God guides me, and God provides for me in so many different ways. So I don't associate with mentors in the way that some people think I should or do, in the sense that I believe that God handles everything. So he puts the right people in my path at the time that I need them, in the space that I need them, for the advice and the guidance and the inspiration that I need.
Okay, cool. Can you identify and share with us one obstacle or barrier that made you more determined to overcome this or succeed?
Attitude, the attitude of other people, my attitude in responding to them. Attitude remains the biggest barrier to inclusion. You know, the people that dismiss you. You know, you walk into a space and people don't pay you any attention. You go into things and people think that you shouldn't be doing this, you shouldn't be doing that. The attitude is the barriers that prevent me. When I was 18 years old, I went to the bank to get an ATM card. And the immediate attitude I got was, well, you're blind, how can you use it? They didn't ask me. And the truth is, I didn't know. And I never wanted to feel less again because of that. Does my blindness irritate me? Yes. Just as some people being 4'10" and they want something off of a shelf that's 6 feet from the ground, just as that is a challenge, just as having a little bit too much weight means you might not be able to fit into that dress, or being whatever, you know, just as those things irritate you from time to time, my blindness irritates me from time to time. When I have a very busy schedule, and the biggest challenge I have is transportation. I'm sure we could have a whole show on transportation. People think that because we're sight blind, that we don't have transportation issues. You have no idea. No idea what our lives are like when we have to battle with it. Just to be independent, it costs me a fortune in taxi fares. Or I call it the price of independence. Because if it isn't the thing in taxi fare, it is waiting upon other people's pleasure. People have lives to live. I cannot expect that my family is sitting down waiting just to drop me from here to there. But if I want to get to somewhere by a specific time, having to wait on somebody else who's doing something different can get irritating. So, to be honest, attitude is the thing that pushes me. And I suppose running a very tight second is independence. I do not like being dependent on anyone.
Kerry, you know that when we get together is chat chat, and then the time slips by, and that's exactly what has happened now. So as we get ready to close off this episode of Visions, share with us your thoughts about the importance of family support, because sometimes I think people feel the individual can do it alone without family support.
I will say family is very, very important, but I will expand on it and say you need to develop a support network that's not just family, because sometimes your family, like I said earlier in this interview, try to protect you from things because they love you. And so they don't like to see people looking at you. They don't like to see you struggling. And sometimes because of that, they protect you a little too much. But family support is necessary. You're having those people there to encourage you, to push you, to work with you, even to just be the person to give you a ride somewhere. It is essential because no, you cannot do it alone. I certainly couldn't do it alone. I come from a huge family on both sides, and so many of them in so many different ways give me that encouragement that I need when I don't feel strong enough to go any further. I often tell my best friend, she's my wind. That song by Bette Midler, Wind Beneath My Wing. She is the most self-effacing person you could want to meet. But without her, without my mother and the other people there lifting my wings, I really could not fly. And so it is essential.
Thank you so, so much, Kerri-Ann, for sharing with us today and allowing the world to see another side of you. And it really has been a distinct pleasure. And I will say thank you again.
Always, always a pleasure to chat with you. So I'll say you're welcome and thank you.
You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudalee Wickham-Ashby. And today, my very special guest, the most honorable Kerri-Ann Ifill. Remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300. You can email me at visionsbarbados@gmail.com. That is visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And of course, you can listen to this and past episodes of Vision by going to VOB929.com website. So until next week, remember, love yourself, love your neighbor as you love yourself, and ciao!